Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and for this episode, we are sneaking in together to Fan Expo 2019 at the Metro Toronto Convention Center into room 716A. This is a Sunday panel, Sunday afternoon, on creator, a spotlight on creator Todd McFarlane, some guy who apparently co-created Venom and co-founded Image Comics, and apparently his creator-owned property Spawn is about to reach issue 300. This was an awesome panel, guys, and I will be the first to admit, Todd McFarlane isn't on my top 10 list as far as artists are concerned or creators are concerned, but after having gone to this panel and having a great experience meeting the man and how generous and kind he was to the fans, he greeted every single person who walked into the panel and said, thank you for being here. His panel was not so much a question and answer, but it was a somewhat of a discourse, but very entertaining, very motivational, very encouraging. And I hope you guys enjoy it. That's why I need to post this for you guys, not simply because it's Todd McFarlane and people are going to click and download it. That's not really the reason. It's that the content of this episode is going to be very, very helpful to a lot of people who are creators who just need that little extra push to go for that goal, go for that thing that they want to go for, that maybe they don't fully have that belief in themselves. Listening to Todd McFarlane's story about his career and how he got to where he got to just helps you to appreciate that if you put your mind to it, not to quote Marty McFly or George McFly, but if you put your mind to it, anything can happen. You never know, but follow your passion. And the worst thing that can happen is that you're proud of yourself. Anyways, this episode is not about me. This is about Todd McFarlane, his panel at Fan Expo 2019. I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did, and stay tuned for more footage from this year's Fan Expo. So signing off, this is Eric Anthony. Don't forget to email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. We're easy to find. And without further ado, Todd McFarlane, Fan Expo 2019.
A lot of ugly people in Boston. I go, Canadians are way more handsome and beautiful. Let me just go on record to say that, right? We're biased, right? That's why I shake hands, because I'm just comparing. No, that was better than that guy from Boston. Right? So, no, we're good. Hey, so here's some of you, who was here yesterday? Show of hands. Oh, about half of you. Okay, that's good. Yesterday we were talking about Spawn 300, right? 300. Yeah. So today, I'm just going to sort of turn the page a little bit, not really talk about comic books per se, but just talk about life in general. I'm just trying to see if we can inspire somebody in this room, right? We got a little bit of a weird title here. That there are moments, I think, in life that people hit forks in the road, or they just need to hear something, or they see something, and it triggers them, and it moves them down a path, right? I'm going to talk about a couple of moments, and I hope that one of the moments I'm going to tell you is one of the inflection points in my life that literally had a giant impact on my life, and it made me move forward. And I'm hoping that the other one, maybe, that we can sort of instill something that comes in your direction. Also, if you listen, there's not a bunch of you. I'm not saying it's going to affect all of you, but I'm hoping that a couple of you, if you listen and you do it, and 5 years from now, you can get there. Here's what I'm going to tell you. There is a possibility, and I'll get back to it. And if it gets late, then you're going to have to remind me, because I got to come all the way back to it. You're going to have to remind me that if you listen, two things could possibly happen in your life. One, Wayne Gretzky can feed you food for free. And two, you could get a mail order bride from Malaysia. And I will tell you how that comes full circle. Right? So get me to that so I don't forget, because I'm going, what about the mail order bride from Malaysia? I don't get it. So let's talk about it. So for that's not good. So for me, I was collecting comic books, and I lived in Calgary, and I started collecting, yes. Where's our Canadian flag? There we go. Okay, go back. Let's go back. Here's inflection point, right there. So here's inflection point number one. I'm Canadian, I'm in Calgary, And the moment, I talked about it yesterday, but for some of you people aren't here, it's the moment that made me say, I'm going to try and be a comic book artist. Although I was collecting comic books, and although I thought I could sort of teach myself the style, I didn't really think that you could be a Canadian, let alone in Calgary, and work for a New York firm. At 16, you don't think about this. So for me, the moment came when I was turning the channel, and for some of you that are as old as me, there's four channels, you guys know, right? There's four, and one of them is public access, so it's not even really a channel, right? So, but I was flipping through it, and all of a sudden, and on public access in Calgary, somebody's standing there, bad lighting, bad setup, it was a bad everything, but all I saw was somebody holding a piece of original artwork, okay? At that time, I was collecting comic books. And the comic book that I thought was not only the coolest, both from a story and an art sort of version, but it was also the best-selling comic book at Marvel at that time, was the Uncanny X-Men, yeah. Right? And so I chose the one that had the Guardian with the maple leaf on it, right? So I took a biased one. It was the best-selling comic book, and for me at 16, 17, it was the best comic book out there. I flipped through the channels, and somebody's holding a piece of original artwork. I'd never seen it before. I didn't know what original artwork was. Not only was it original artwork, but it was from the Uncanny X-Men. Uncanny X-Men, black and white original artwork. Wow. I'd never seen it. It was, again, like some of the stuff that you might see here at this convention. Then it sort of goes higher. And then all of a sudden they start talking to the guy. And the guy holding the piece of paper was an artist named John Byrne.
Yeah.
John Byrne is that artist right there. He was doing the book. And now I'm just going, what the heck? Is John Byrne holding original artwork from the best-selling comic book doing on Calgary public access TV? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. And then the moment he says, oh yeah, by the way, I live in Calgary. It blew my mind. That was a moment. He didn't even know. And I met John Byrne after that. He doesn't even know. That moment was the one that cemented it for me. So there are going to be these times in life where you're either going to hear, see, read something, and it's going to trigger a point in you, and you're going to be able to go. And you're going to go, wow. And that was the moment for me, because I, at that point, I thought, I like comic books, but it's a fool's dream. And I went, so you're saying that the guy who draws the best-selling book from a company in New York literally lives 2 miles from me. So not only could Canadians do it, but Calgarian specifically, and even more greedy, me, right? I just went, I'm going to start doing my samples. And I started going, I'm going to teach myself, and I'm going to, at some point, begin sending samples, right? Inflection point number two comes about 6 months later when I'm down. I went to school playing baseball. That's how I got my schooling paid for. And I go down to Florida, and I'm ending our baseball camp. We were down there for a baseball camp. And as we come into the Holiday Inn, because I don't know if some old people here, comic book conventions used to be just about comic books, right? So it used to be comic conventions were comic book people, comic book little benches. Everything was comic book. But they weren't very big. There were some comic book conventions that were about as big as this room. They were in ballrooms. Some of you people have been there, some of the old folk. It was about this big, about 20 tables, a couple guests, and that was it. We called them conventions. We're going to leave in Florida. My mom and dad are, I think it was my mom, she's signing us at the desk because we've got to leave the next day. And there's this little placard that says, down the hall, comic convention. And I'm like, what? Now, I'm collecting comic books at this point. I'm a freak about comic books. So I stroll down that hall. And down that hall, there were some people that I had bought their books. I remember there was a guy named Pat Broderick and Mike Zeck and a couple other. But outside, not even in the room, because it was like you could only fit 20, outside was a table, and there was a guy named Stanley standing, sitting there, right? Now, okay, no, I hear the woo now, but let's put it in context. Stanley wasn't the Stanley yet, right? He hadn't made his mark worldwide like he did at the end, and I had the good pleasure, I can touch upon that a little bit later. So Stan's sitting there, but to me, as a comic geek, that was the Pope, right? And so, and the reason he's the Pope, ladies and gentlemen, for any, I don't know if it's still true, but I knew back then, every Marvel comic book, if you open the front page, the first line you read on every comic book said the exact same thing. Stanley presents. Stanley presents. He was just, that was like God. It was like God presents. I'm like, oh my God, is the Pope. He's on everything. He's bigger than life. And so here's Stan Lee. Now, Stan's sitting there, and I go up to him, and I go, hey, Mr. Lee, I'm thinking of trying to break in the comic books. Do you mind if I ask you any questions? Right? Can I ask you a question? And without a hesitation, Stan Lee pulls a chair over. Didn't say, hey, he just pulled the chair and said, and he tapped it, which basically meant, sit down. For 4 hours, he let me sit there and pepper him with questions. Now, you may sit there and go, what, Todd? How are you peppering a question with the big, long lineup? He wasn't the Stan Lee yet. He was still Stan. Let's jump forward. Stan Lee, and I got to be up on stage with Stan more than any human being, I believe. Stan Lee is the only guy I know, because usually there's a natural bell curve to celebrity. You sort of go and you make it, and then the next generation comes on and you fade and you go away, right? Stan Lee's the only guy who said at about 86, said, shit, I'm going to be a movie star. And he started doing those cameos, right? And it was the cameos that put him on the map. At 88, who starts a career at 88? As a matter of fact, when he died, he went out on top. Like, who's 94? Who amongst us think at 94 we're going to be at our high mark, right? What are you talking about? We'll be like crippled over and nobody will care about us. They'll put us in old folks' home. And Stan was still on an up trajectory. So it was too bad that he sort of had to leave us too soon. But for me, that was the moment. It was a 1-2. It was, wow, Canadians can do it. And Stan just gave me a bunch of tips. He gave me 20 tips, and I went back with a fervent pitch after that. Then said, I'm going to put all this into play, all this into play, all this into play. It took years. Let me just tell you, from that time, it's not like I got a job real quick. It took years of training myself, sending off samples, getting rejected, applying the constructive criticism before I ever got there, right? And I said the story before, I sent off over 700 samples over the 2-3 years I was in college, got hundreds of rejection, and then eventually I got the phone call, and I got in. So, if a dumb guy like me, I'm telling you, I got bad grades. I was the first name basis with my principal. I remember, just to sort of show you how it all worked, we had in Calgary, I went to high school called William Eberhardt. We had a talent contest. I won the William Eberhardt contest. And I got in trouble with it because at the end I was making fun of the principal because the principal had done this thing where something had gotten fired and he got mad. And when he got mad, his voice cracked, right? And it got around the school that he was talking like a girl, right? And so I made fun of that up on stage, but I used a bunch of F-bombs while I was doing it. But I thought, you know what an air horn is? You hit it and it go, ah. I go, no, I'm not going to curse because I'll get in trouble. So I go, I'll just hit the air horn every time I curse. I just didn't practice. Right? So I had the air horn here and I had my mic here. So when I was screaming the F-bombs, I remember the student body was killing themselves laughing. They go, wow, this is going over good. And I found out because every single curse word I said in that whole script was coming over the PA system loud and hard and big. And at the end of the year, we had a vote. Student body picks the valedictorian. And they voted, and I won. Seems like a surprise. I'm not smart. But I just liked everybody at the school, and they liked me, and we were all good. And so they voted, and it was like, and over the PA, it said, the winner of the valedictorian is Todd McFarlane. Some of the people in the class were okay. 2 minutes later, Todd McFarlane, please come to the principal's office. I go, wow, he's going to congratulate me. Right? Wow, the first time he's going to say something positive. Didn't work out that way. He'd go, there, under no circumstances am I letting you get up on stage with a mic in front of the students and their parents? Are you out of your mind, son? So we're going to pick another. So I didn't get to be the valedictorian. Anyway, here's the second inflection point, which is I started doing comic books. We started Spawn, and we literally had a blockbuster. But the second inflection I'm here to tell you is that I believe that somebody in this room, if not five of you, can be the next person. I'm not talking about comic books, and I'm not talking about writing. I'm just talking about life. I have fought my entire career against big corporations my entire life, right? And here's what I'm going to tell you, your greatest enemy that you will ever, ever, ever come up against in my 50-plus years of going up, the biggest enemy you're going to come up with in your life, and I'm sure some of you have already done it, is status quo. People will not encourage change. They will not. They won't even encourage efficiencies. So if you work for a big corporation especially and you've got a better idea, it takes a special manager to walk your idea upstairs and tell the people that have been running the system a certain way that their way of doing it may not be the right way, because people sort of get really frustrated with that. So they're going to keep saying these things to you like, you know, just keep it to yourself. Don't do it. Get in line. Don't be that person. Don't rock the boat. Right? Why you want to be a rebel? All the words. We got them all. We got them all. I got it. Let me also tell you. The only constant, there's only two constants. I believe there's only two constants in life, really. There's only two constants in life. One that I believe to be true. One, everybody in this room is going to die at some point. Don't mean to be a bummer, but it's true. Right? We're all going to die. That's a constant. The other constant, if you look at history, is that there's only one other one. Change. Otherwise, we'd still be living in caves. We've been changing and evolving and going and going. And every time change comes, somebody resists it. And usually the person that resists it are those that are beholden to that person, that place that is in power. The people that are in power, the people that have the market share, the people that basically are the corporation then or the politician. Nobody's ever going to, if you've got a better idea than them, I have never heard the story where you go, hey, I've got an idea that might be better than yours, and they go, oh, shoot, let me just step aside, and you go ahead, and you go walk right by me. They won't do it. Are you out of your mind? They want you to think that what they're doing is genius at all times, and it can't be bettered at all times. All change, for the most part, historically, has always come from the outside. It's never come from the inside. The people that are up never basically come up with the next cool idea. It's always somebody from the outside who says, I'm going to do this. And they go, you fool. Look, when I came in, I'll give you my, again, personal example. When I started with the toys, and toys were $5, I made mine $6. And all the people at Mattel and all the people at Marvel, they were like, and I remember that they kept coming, they were like, you can't talk, you know, little boy. You know, you don't know what you're doing. You know, you can't sell a $6 toy, right? Toys are, of course you can, ladies and gentlemen. Not only can you sell something for $6, you can sell something for $47,000. They're called cars. You can sell something for $200,000. They're called houses. Of course you can sell something for $6. What are you talking about? People will give you hundreds of thousands of dollars if they believe that the product that you have is worth the value of that price. So, not only can I sell a $6, here, I told them, I go, here's how I'm going to sell a $6 toy. You guys may want to take some notes. I'm going to not only make a $6 toy, I'm not going to make a $5 toy, I'm going to make a $6 toy and sell it for $6. No, I'm going to make what I perceive to be a $7 or $8 toy and sell it for $6. And then I'm giving them perceived value at a discount, and then I can compete with you. What you're thinking of, Fortune 500 company, is how do you basically put a $5 toy and sell it for $6? You can't sell that, because they're going to find out, the consumer's going to find out that, like, it's not worth $6. It's a $5 item. Give them a $10 item for $7, and that you can sell that. And that's all I did. To compete with all the products that the big companies have done, we had to basically go out there and put build a better mousetrap. So if you've ever woken up with the idea of saying, starting any sentence, some of the best ideas in the world to start with this sentence. I know this sounds stupid, but if you've ever had that thought, write it down. That's where inspiration comes from. What stops people is that they talk themselves out of that next step of going forward, right? Let me tell you that if you just try, the worst that happens is you fail and you've got nothing to lose, right? So moms, if there's any moms in here, close your ears, because I'm going to sort of betray some of your teaching. Moms will always say, raise the bar. I say the opposite. Lower your damn bar. Lower it. And the way to do, here's what I said, lower your bar when you're going into interviews. Lower your bar when you're going into negotiations. Lower your bar. And here's the lower the bar. Assume the answer is going to be no. Try as hard as you damn can. Give it 100%, but assume the answer is going to be no. Why? Because if they say no, what you're probably going to do 90% of the time, you don't go home mentally drained. You know how many people I know that think that every interview they go to, every negotiation they do, they're going to get it? Maybe some of you guys have made this mistake. And it just kills you when they tell you no, right? You think the answer is yes. They're going to hire me. No. And you're going to go dim, and you go home. But watch this one. If you flip what I just told you, I bet you they're not going to hire me. Watch this. And you go in there, and they go, didn't. And you go, hey, no, we're not going to hire you. And you go, fuck, nailed it. Right? And you sit there, and then you do that. No, it's true. And you're true. And then all of a sudden, you've done 10. You've done 20 of these, and it's been no, no, no. And now you're going, shit, I got a hot streak. I'm at 30. One nose in the row, and I called every one of them. I wish I had these odds in Vegas. And then you get the day in which, and it's a mixed blessing that day, where you go there and you do the interview, and then you leave it, and they go, whoa, 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 Todd, where are you going? I go, I know you're not going to hire me. And they go, yes, we are. And you stop. And two things happen. First off, you go, shit, they just ruined my streak. And you were on a streak and you felt good about it. And you go, okay, but in to trade away the broken streak that you were proud of, you got a job. And now you're working for them. And it's a good day. So the first 31 no's, you just go, good, I got it, they weren't gonna hire me. Don't worry about it. Don't put the taxation, the stress on your heart. Stop it. And here's why you want low bars, ladies and gentlemen. High bars are tough to get over. Low bars, watch this, over. The lower you keep it, the easier it is to get over it. A no is easy to get over. I've said, I got a couple employees right here. I've told them, if you want, every single day you should come into my office, you should ask for a raise. Every day. What's the worst that happens? I say no. And you get paid the exact same amount as when you walked in that door. There is no downside to trying. Now, what if you get me on a weekday and I'm just like, I'm tired and I'm like, oh my God, is this a 20? Yeah, fine. You can get your rate. Like, you get it, right? What's the worst that happens? You just get it. I used to go into Marvel and ask for a raise and I didn't care how or what they called me. Well, you know, you haven't really been doing this, and we don't like you. We hear your attitude, and it's like, whatever. To me, it was just like a dog. It was blah, 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 or Charlie Brown, blah, blah. And as long as I got my raise, I don't care how they got to it. I don't, dude, you can call me an a-hole and give me a raise, or you can call me a saint and don't give it to me. I'll take the first one. I have a goal. I want the raise. So go. Go and ask for it. So here's, I'm going to give you facts now as to how in our industry, and I'm saying this is applicable to other industries that give you openings, and here's what happens with big companies. Here's the weakness of a big company. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, what the biggest weakness of a big company is their bigness. It is that easy. And what happens with big things, they don't move very well. Right? They're big and they make $1 billion and God bless them, but they don't turn very well. So the reason that a company like mine can survive amongst these giants is because I'm quick and I'm fast, I'm nimble. Right? That's being small, they're gonna tell you is a negative. It can be, but I'm telling you, it can also be a positive. When I walk into Walmart and Target and Toys R Us, I say to them, I go, look, at my company is only X big, and it's going to be the blessing and the curse of our relationship. And the blessing is that we can have a conversation, talk about something within 48 hours, be implementing it. Big companies will take 2 weeks just to even have a meeting, to even consider the question that was asked 2 weeks earlier. I'll be 2 weeks into the process by the time they get to it. Speed can matter, because you can get to marketplace faster than somebody else. So, what did we do when I was out there? We started our toys, and we went against the giants, but I'm gonna give you some facts about comic books. So let's just talk about comic books and how the giants right now are doing all of us a favor, right? So, June 2019, this ain't hyperbole, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to give you facts. In June of 2019, 94 of the top 100 comic books were a Marvel or DC comic book. Now, you can sit there and go, if I go do an independent comic book, oh my gosh. I am telling you right now, today is the best day of your life to do an independent creator-owned comic book, bar none. It's never been as good. Now, you can look at that number, and you can say, 94 out of 100, what are you talking about, Todd? I'm going to tell you why it's good. Marvel Comic Books is owned by Disney. Disney is not going to share those characters. Matter of fact, Disney spent $2 billion to extract Iron Man from Paramount in. They just have to spend. They wanted to buy Fantastic Four and the X-Men for $2 billion, and they said no, and that's why they canceled the Fantastic Four. If any of you were paying attention, the reason Fantastic Four didn't have a comic book, because Disney was trying to buy it back, and they didn't want to give value to Fox, so they canceled the book. So eventually they went back to him and said, come on, we'll give you $2 billion for Fantastic Four and $2 billion for the X-Men. And guess what happened? Fox, pretty clever, said, hey, no, you can have those two, except we're bundling them with the rest of the studio. You have to buy the whole studio. And we think we want $48 billion for it. You came in offering $4. Somebody says $48? $48 billion. And they thought about it, and they went, I don't know if I'm going to do that. And then they went, okay, fine, we'll do it. And then another big, giant company called Comcast came in and went, well, we'll give you $50 billion. And then it just went and went and went. Disney ended up getting it $73 billion later, right? They went in trying to spend $4 billion, and they spent $73 billion. So now what's going to happen, they're going to keep all those things that are in there. You saw what happened with Spider-Man recently. They wanted to try and extract Spider-Man, right? And Sony went, no, ain't going to happen, right? So DC Comic Books is owned by Warner Brothers. And let me tell you, if you've been paying attention, Warner Brothers never shares their characters. Disney's trying to extract them all in, so they will never share them. Warner Brothers has never shared them. Why does this matter? Oh, it is a good day for everybody in this room. Because if you are Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, ABC, NBC, or any cable station, right? Your Showtime, your HBO, your Starz, I don't care what you are, Lifetime, your BET, I don't care. There are hundreds of them. And if you are any of the producers that are in Hollywood, and there are way over 1,000 of them, so combined between these billion-dollar empires and the producers, there's over 1,200 people in Hollywood today that must create content, and they're looking at these billion-dollar movies called Avengers that are making all this money, and they all want comic book stuff. And here's what has to happen to these 1,200 people, of which some of them are worth a billion. They have to take a Sharpie, and they have to black out those 94. Because if they're not Disney or Warner Brothers, they're not getting it. So every one of those companies I just told you, 1,200 of them that are looking for new product, 94 out of 100 go away. Okay, what else? Two of them were existing properties. I think one was the Teenage Ninja Mutant Turtles, the other one was Buffy or something like that. You can't get those, they're already gone. So now you're up to 96. That left four. The four of them that were there was an Archie comic book that Warner Brothers already owned, so now we're down to three. One was The Walking Dead, been sold, can't get it. The other one was Spawn, can't get it. And the other one was Saga, already been bought, can't get it. So do the math. If you are a billion-dollar corporation and you turn to your executive and you go, get me the freest number that I can turn into a product, you can't touch a top 100 item. Think about it. So anybody that's sitting here that wants to talk themselves out of it, and if you do, you're probably not built for this ride. But if you think you got to do a book that's in the top 10, you don't. If you think you got to do a book that's in the top 50, you don't. If you got to do a book in the top 100, you don't, because they can't even get to it. The first number that's available to Hollywood in June, and I haven't even phoned that creator, so I don't even know it's true, is 108. So you have to ask yourself, do I have the confidence that I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to my mom and I go, Mom, I'm number 108 today. Fuck number one. Not even 72. Mom's going to ask maybe 82. You go, Mom, 108, back off. 108. Surely somebody in this room has the confidence to get up and say, I think I have an ego that will get me to 108. And here's the next thing. The next one that's available is 122, and the next one's 143. They're, like, essentially, because there's still Marvel and DC books between 101 and 200. They still have to put lines through those. We've got 23 books at Image that are in some kind of production that's in there, which basically means I'm telling you right now, if you are anywhere between 101 and 200, you will be probably a top five or six call to billion-dollar empires, all right? Now, if you have no interest in the billion-dollar empires, and you do not have to, then just let's talk about the math of it. The math of it is that the 100th selling book in June sold 24,000 copies. The 100th, because there's a ranking, right? It's from number one, and it drops down. And the 100th book sold 24,000 copies. So if you can write, pencil, and ink your own book, which is cool, then when you put out a book, and usually you put out a book at $2.99, $3.99, let's just do some easy math, you're going to personally get, depending on the distribution, a buck and a half a book. So do the math. 24,000 times a buck and a half, that's 36,000 a month. Times 12. Do that math. That's over $400,000. It's not even a starving artist. You guys are going, well, I don't want to be a starving artist. $400,000 a year to make the top 100. That's what that is, ladies and gentlemen. I don't understand why everybody isn't doing that. It's bizarre to me, I got to tell you. You guys, I would learn to draw or write or do something in your spare time while you're working at your day job, and to go and maybe just keep selling it so at some point you can try and jump into that pool, because it's not a bad living, right? And that's not even saying you're getting money from Hollywood. That's not even saying you're getting t-shirts and hats and toys and all the other things, right? This is it. This number is there. And so my plea to everybody in this room, my begging you, not only do you like to beg, but you guys are handsome and beautiful, I told you before, is create and get up on this stage someday and be that person that's sitting there, right? Like, so they have to come, they're going to have to come to you. And while you're waiting for them to come to you, you're going to be making a lot of money anyways. We now get phone calls from Hollywood for our solicitations. You guys know what solicitations are. You put a cover, you put a price, and you put like three sentences. We were getting phone calls from Hollywood that are making preemptive buys on that. They haven't even read the issue. Because they know the moment that book comes and hits the stand, those 1,200 people I was talking about are all gonna be looking at it. And they're gonna get in a bidding war. So they're actually preempting buying it, going, I like the cover, what's it about? And you give them like 2 minutes, and they're going, cool, I'll buy it, right? They'll buy it. I'm not saying they're gonna make it, but you're going, okay, it's some extra money while you're making your thing. Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not do this? Why not get out there? Right? Now, if we go, what do we got here? What's our next slide here? So how does that get you any place? Well, if I had just said no, I was just gonna fall in the path of everybody else, then we were gonna get to look at it. I've been in trouble since I was in grade 5, right? So I've been in trouble a lot. But I talked about it a little bit yesterday. The creation of a character called Venom was because I just have this sort of rebel attitude in me. Most people, when they told me to take over Spider-Man, most people would have said in this room, they said, hey, you can come and draw Spider-Man. Most people would have gone, cool, right? That would have been, that's a sane answer. That's a reasonable adult answer. That wasn't my answer. I was doing a Hulk. And I was just going, I want to draw some fun stuff. I just want to have some fun drawing this stuff. And he was in his black costume. And I was going, I'm not drawing, not doing his black costume. I'm like, no, Todd, we need a new artist. We don't have an artist. I'm not drawing him in that black costume. Like, it doesn't mean nothing to me. Red, Spider-Man's red and blue. So I told him I would come back and I would draw Amazing Spider-Man. He kept begging if they got rid of the black costume. right? Most people in this room would have gone, oh my God, I'm drawing Spider-Man. I'm going to go tell my girlfriend and my mom. That's the right. I just went, no, no, I have a condition. Get rid of that costume. And they came back and they said that the editor-in-chief liked the black costume. Easy answer. Easy answer. Let's just put it on somebody else. Let's tear that costume off Peter Parker. Put it on somebody else. I'll create this cool thing, monster. We'll call it Salmon, Venom, whatever. We'll give him a name eventually. We'll get there. And I'll get to draw. And that was it. That was it. That, I wish I could say it was smarter than that. That was it. My immaturity and my stubbornness essentially was a giant happy accident to get the Venom, because most human beings would have said, yes, sir, I'll draw Spider-Man. And what would have happened, I think, is that he would have worn that black costume for another 2 years, and then they would have got tired of it, they would have retired it, they would have put him back in his costume, and then we would have gone on. Just like a lot of events in comic books, they sort of don't have any impact. That's it. He would have just gone boom, boom. He would have been done with it. So at that moment, by me being stubborn, you end up having a character that now becomes a sort of, I didn't know, nobody knew, this big phenomenon, the writer David Michelinie, he didn't know, none of us knew, that would come on and do it because of a little bit of stubbornness. Because here's the thing, when I was doing Spider-Man, I've said before, where they sort of, as I took the book, I took over the book at, it was 22 in the ranking, and took it to number one. And they were always, every time I went to New York, they were always pointing their finger going, stop doing that, Dodd, stop doing that drawing, stop, you're messing with the icon, you're messing with status quo, stop. The sales were going up. Sales were going up. And here's what I liken it to. The goal, I thought the goal was for me to sell the most comic books at Marvel. Nobody else was employed at Marvel to sell them as much as I was at that time. It seemed like a weird thing to basically be sitting there saying, hey, I'm going to start arguing with the guy who's selling more comic books than anybody else, right? These are the conversations I was having on an ongoing basis. I'm selling more comic books than anybody else, and every time I come, all I do is get recommended. Seems like a weird thing from an employee's point of view. I thought I was hired to sell comic books, and I was doing it, putting cash in their pockets. We're in the commerce business. I was doing it. What bugged them was that I just wasn't doing it their way. And this is the emotion, and this is the status quo. They wanted me to take it from 22 to 1, doing it their way and not doing it. And so what they did was, when I sort of started doing this new art, they took it as a personal slight, that I was saying, you're dumb, you don't know how to do Spider-Man, I'm going to draw it this way because you're dumb. That wasn't it, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you, at no point was that ever part of the equation. Here's exactly what was going on. I'm in my room in the house up on Vancouver Island, which is where I did all my Spider-Man. And I sit in a small room for 12 hours a day, and I have to entertain myself. And if you can't entertain yourself in a room by yourself, there's nobody in there with you. So it's a very lonely occupation. So you have to go, what can I put on paper that would be fun to draw so I can get through today? It's 12 hours. Oh, what if he was doing this? And what if he looked like that? And what if I create these cool webs? And what if I did this? And that was it. And thank God that all you guys sort of said, oh, that looks cool too. I wasn't even thinking about you. I was thinking about me. I was all selfish at that point. And then the readers went, oh, that's kind of a cool look. And then so we got the sale. And to me, I thought it was weird that, like, what do they care what it looks like if the sales are going up? Right? The goal, we had a goal, which was to sell the most comic books. So here's, to me, how I liken it. The goal, let's just say, let's make it up. The goal is to be at Freddy's at 10 o'clock on Friday for the party. That's the goal. Everybody agree, 10 o'clock, Freddy, party, let's go, everybody. Yeah, we're all going. And then 10 o'clock comes, and everybody's there. And instead of being happy that we all reached the goal, it's Friday, we're going to have a party, it's going to be good. What happens is they started complaining about how we got there. Oh, how'd you get there, Todd? Well, I took Highway 10 and then I got off at exit 47. Like, oh, well, we took Highway 5 and we went up Elm Street. Oh, I see. Highway 5 and Elm Street's not good enough for you, Todd, right? And it was, they were worried about how we got to the party instead of the goal was to get to the party at 10. We met our goal. Who cares how each one of us got there? We hit our goal. And that's the stuff that eventually just wore me out. And I had to just eventually go, right? And I was going to have my first... daughter, so I was going to be a father, so I just went, it's a good time for me to just sort of break away. And that was my decision. I do actually remember the moment, but it was more of a straw that broke a camel's back. It was just that moment that you just go, nah. And so if you're at that point in your job at some point, try something else. And the worst that happens, you fail miserably, you can always go back to being an employee. Right? I'll give you a hint. If you're going to start your own business, see if you can find something else that you can compare it to. Here's why small businesses fail at about an 85 to 90% rate. Because people then create spreadsheets and they go, hey, we're going to sell donuts at this donut shop. We've got to sell 1,000 donuts at $3 a pop. And if we do that, then all the people we hire and all the things we're going to, it all works out. 1,000 donuts at $3, boom, 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 and it all works out, we're making a profit. So here, I have one question for you, if that's your spreadsheet. Whenever I look at a spreadsheet, I only have one question for anybody. Can you replicate this anyplace else within a 100-mile radius? Because if it was me, before I opened up a donut shop, I'd go and find the top 3 donut shops within about a 25-mile radius of you, and I would sit there with a clicker, and I would count for about 3 weeks or a month how many donuts they're selling. And I would look, and if I found out that the most popular donut shop is selling 600 a month, and your spreadsheet says you have to sell 1,000, that's not going to work. Right? I understand it looks good on paper. I understand the numbers work good on paper. There's no reality. So if you're going to start your own business, see if you can replicate it someplace else. Also, all you have to do is just put a little bit of sexy on everything. Right? That's all you do. I didn't invent toys. We didn't invent comic book. We just put computer coloring, put slick paper. I put some more detail into it, and we just got to the place that we got to. And then if you do that, eventually you can start your first issue. Put in a mere 27 years, and then you can be at a convention and celebrate your 300 issues, right? That's a whole other panel, the 27 years, but that was yesterday. But you can get there. You can get into the 27. Now, let's circle back. I don't know if there's other panels there, but let's circle back as to how you can get a mail order bride. And better yet, Wayne Gretzky feeding you for free. Okay, so if you then do your comic book, and you break off and you do it, and all of a sudden Spawn was at the top of the charts when we first started, then we started the toy company, then people will then invite you to shows, right? So let's talk about the mail order bride. I got invited years ago to go to Singapore. I go to Singapore. I go there with an artist named Mike Grell. I don't think I've ever been to Singapore. People there are kind of small, right? So they're not very, it's a great place for a guy like me to live, because when they were writing the articles, they kept calling me and the husky Todd McFarlane. The husky, right? Yeah. Look at this, ladies and gentlemen. The husky, I've never heard that word before. What are you talking about? This thing is a rat belly when I flex it, right? So, but I'm like, for a week in Singapore, I was husky. And Mike Grell, my buddy, who's not the most felt guy, they called him Paunchy. In national newspapers, he's like, and the Paunchy Mike Grell and the husky Todd McFarlane. I don't know why they had to do all this, because they were doing this cool thing. I remember when I was driving around Singapore, they had, like, you know, the before and afters if you go on diet? And I couldn't see a difference. I remember I was looking at it, and it was just a guy like here. It was like before, after, before, after. I mean, it was literally that much, but they were fat shaming everybody at that point, and they were doing it. Anyways, at the end of that show I did, somebody says, hey, somebody from Malaysia. Here we go. Somebody from Malaysia wants to do an interview with you. I went, cool. Well, we're going to do it after the show. Yeah, okay, they'll meet you at 11. 11, 11:30, 12, 12:31. Nobody shows up. I got to get a plane the next morning. I go to bed. I go, I'm done. 1:30. Somebody knocks at my door. It's the reporter and his photographer. And I'm like, oh, sorry, we're late. Late? It's 1:30 in the morning. What are you talking about? So we did the interview. I go, yeah, I'll do the interview. I did the interview. And then they say, oh, yeah, by the way, we need you. You know, I was in bed. I was sleeping. I go, sit over there. I'll just give you the answer. And you guys can go, no. Now we need you to get dressed. And we need you to basically get dressed. Can we take some photos? By this point, it's past 2 o'clock. I go, no, that's not how this is going to work. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to sit up in bed, right? You're going to take a picture. You crop it. You put it in your article, and we're good. No big deal. We're out. About 3 weeks later, I start going, remember? My wife's here, remember? Because she came, what the hell was this? And you open it up, and it was all these dads willing to sell their daughters to me for a visa and to be a bride. Right? My daughter is 13. She's a good cook. They have pictures of their daughters. She will marry you. Please come back. She will be a good wife. She will be a good wife. We got dozens of these. It was a tough time explaining to my wife. I went to Malaysia, and now I've got mail order brides coming through the yin yang. Like, what the hell did you do? You were supposed to be signing comic books. So, eventually, somebody was in there, says, oh my God, you were so cute. Could you please sign the article? And what they had done was they had taken the picture, and again, I was buck naked when they took the picture, right? But I had the covers up to here, and when I sat up, they didn't crop it. So it looked like what was it? There's Penthouse, what was it one for the lady? What was that one called?
Playgirl.
It looked like a Playgirl shoot, right? I'm up, and I'm young, and I was ripped pretty good, and I was naked, essentially, from the... And they put that on page one of the Malaysian newspaper, and it was like, rich Canadian, doing good, and go marry this dude, you can get a visa, and they came, right? So, but I would have never have gone to Singapore if I hadn't started something and got invited. So if you do that, you might get a bride from another country if you want. So there's number one. If that's in your pool of bucket list things that you need, that's a possibility. Number two, Wayne Gretzky. My personal, look, I don't geek about anybody because I don't really pay attention to celebrities, but Wayne Gretzky is the only guy that weakens my knees, right? He's the only guy that can come, oh my God, Wayne Gretzky. He was born in 61. I was born in 61, and I just sort of grew up with them. I went down to America. They just started ESPN. They were doing a Gretzky watch because they didn't have any other license, and I was in starting baseball, watching this new channel, ESPN, talking about Gretzky. It was the best thing ever for a Canadian. When I was part of the Edmonton Oilers ownership, we had a retirement party for him when we raised the banner up, just to tell you guys that banner that's up there that says 99. My initials are on it, right? Because nobody was at the Coliseum that day, and I went behind the curtain and there was the banner. I'm like, shoot, that's the banner. It's going up tonight. I always have a Sharpie on me. I go, you can't go big, but if you actually look, I went, I put my initials on that band. It's like, when it went up that night, oh my gosh, I was so proud. Not the friends, like me. But we gave a dinner the next day, and they said, whatever you do, don't bring a camera. The owners, let's just be a little respectful. Let's do it. Are you kidding? I'm going to have Wayne Gretzky, and I'm not going to get a photo with Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky's a really nice man, let me just tell you. So it was this dark Italian restaurant. You guys have been there. And so I just waited. I waited and waited and waited until he was getting ready to leave. And then I went, hey, Wayne, you mind if I get a picture? I could see that he was like going, finally, somebody. Because he's a nice guy. He's like, finally, somebody's asking. I was like, feeling bummed out. And if you've ever been in a dark restaurant and you got a flash, it's like lightning just hit the room, right? And I went, poof, and they just went, who brought a camera? And the answer was, of course, Todd. But let me tell you, all the other owners hit their wife and went, I told you we should have brought the camera. Right? Stop following the rules, right? Stop following the rules. Because by following the rules, they didn't get a picture. And I've got this cool-ass picture of me and Wayne sitting there, and I'm going, I've got it right in my office still. It's pretty cool. That's not the story. I end up knowing Wayne a little bit. We're making the toys. And so we're going to be making a Wayne Gretzky toy. So I go up to his house. He's living in Thousand Oaks, California at this point. Lives at the top of a hill. Beautiful house. He's shooting a Pepsi commercial. So in between the shoots of the Pepsi commercial, he says, hey, I'll come into this van that had this big scanner. And what a big scanner does, you get in there, you pose, and go, and you got a wireframe of that, and you can make a toy of it really quickly. So Wayne was going to basically act his own body. I was going to literally get Wayne to basically do Wayne moves. And I'm like, cool, like we're in a van, you got Wayne in your van, right? Like you win a bagel, Wayne Gretzky, and you win a bagel, it's a good day. right? And then he goes, I gotta go for lunch. And I'm like, no, sure, okay, just go ahead. And then he goes, what are you doing, Todd? And I went, what? I said, we're going for lunch. Come on, I'm gonna make you lunch. What? So I go into his house, right? And you're like, oh my God, it's a beautiful house. And then I'm sitting there, and his wife, Janet Jones, sitting there, she's telling me about the new house and all the rugs and whatever else. And I'm sitting there. So Janet's here, and I'm here, and I'm looking through the opening to the kitchen, and there's Wayne Gretzky. Imagine Wayne Gretzky. You're looking at him this way, and Wayne Gretzky's sitting there, and he's making sandwiches, and then he's going like this. Todd, do you like pickles? Yeah, I like pickles. Whatever. Yeah. Mayonnaise. Mayonnaise good for you? I'm getting served free lunch by Wayne Gretzky in his own damn house. So I'm telling you, try it. Hire guys if you succeed. Male owner brides and your celebrity of your life gets to feed you campaign sandwiches. It's a good life. Come on. I beg you to try it, because goofy stuff happens and you never know. My wife doesn't like this story. I have a Grammy and I don't know anything about music. I can't even read music. My wife is a pretty accomplished pianist. I don't even know what it is. It's just dots on paper. How do you get a Grammy if you don't know nothing about music? I don't play. I don't sing. I'm horrible. I don't know nothing. I directed a music video. That's the back door. So there's always a back door. So when we directed it and we got nominated, the first one we did was with Pearl Jam, got nominated. We didn't win that one. Madonna won that year. I did it nothing, but I went, wow, cool. Do a music video, get nominated for a Grammy. It's pretty easy. And then I didn't understand these other people have been at it for 12 years. I'm like, I did one. And then they offered to do another one. I did one for Korn. And then they phoned me again and go, hey, you're nominated again? I go, shit, it's like too easy now. But we actually won, right? So I got a Grammy, right? I know nothing about music. And it's frustrating, right? It's just frustrating. It's frustrating to people that you can just backdoor these things, because these are opportunities, because opportunities don't come in a straight line. They come serendipitously. And the reason for me to even get that Grammy was because I ended up doing this book called Spawn that then went to HBO. When I went to HBO, part of the deal was I was in charge. I knew nothing about animation. They put me in charge. I learned animation. Pearl Jam sees the animation. We do the Pearl Jam one that was animated. Somebody asked me to do some more animation on the second one that was half animated, half real. It was the Korn one. And it wins. So there's... who knew? What are you talking about? I'm a kid in Calgary, 16 years old, watching PBS, seeing John Byrne hold up a tape of original X-Men, and it just gets you to places that as you sit here right now, you cannot even imagine. And you just take it, right? When we went to Phoenix, and I'm opening up to a couple questions, we went to Phoenix, when we first got there, somebody said, hey, they got the Ernst & Young Award for Best Businesses. Somebody said, hey, we've nominated your business as a business entrepreneur of the year or something like that. I went, yeah, whatever, cool. And then they phoned again and said, no, now you're in the finals. I went, yeah, whatever. And then they said, oh, you got to come to the dinner. I go, I'm not going to go to dinner with rich, stuffy white people. And so they went, no, you won. And I went, what? Could you come, Todd? It'd be good if you could accept your award. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll go. And I remember the speech. I only get dressed really for a couple of occasions. Usually it's for weddings and funerals. Those are only two times I usually dress up. And so I got dressed up this day. And they give me the award and I get up there. And I just couldn't lie. I had to tell them the truth. Look, ladies and gentlemen, this is a little bit awkward for me. I have to tell you that the people that you represent, the corporations you represent, my entire life I have railed against you. I don't even like you people. Right? So my everything that I am today, the people, we just fight to slay giants like you, right? Because you get too conceited, you think you know everything, you don't want to look at any other options. And you know what was happening that whole time? I was looking at the audience. Todd, you're killing us. You're the funniest guy we ever met. And I sat there and insulted them for 13 minutes, and they gave me a standing O. Because they said I was the funniest speech guy ever. And it was like, that was the truth, right? And people came up to me that whole night going, this has been a boring place for years and years, and you were the funniest thing, that you think that we're pieces of shit. Nobody would like that. So you can't even insult them when you get the chance. So don't even get that satisfaction, right? So here's where we go. All right, so we got a couple minutes. We'll open it up. Like I said, hopefully something along this. Here's some of the covers. We got 300 that are coming out. Let me just tell you what 300 is. 300 ties a record. The Dave Sim, another Canadian, did 300 issues. Yeah. He holds a world record. Another Canadian is gonna tie the record and break the record. Canadian on Canadian for world record. What the hell is happening to every other goddamn country? Right? So we're doing that. Through it. In the meantime, take a look at it. If anybody's got a couple questions, we got time for maybe two questions, two, three questions. Anybody got, I don't, someone's gonna, you're gonna have to come this way. Who's got one? Right here. There's one right here. Come on up. Right? There's one. There's one right there, too. And then the one in the green, there's our three. And then they have to get ready for the next panel. Oh, there's Jeffrey Scott Campbell. Jeffrey Scott Campbell, I got him to go not just do cover. He came in and did 9 pages on the interior. He did some cool stuff. This is Greg Capullo, some cool big moments in the Greg Capullo stuff. Arguably, my 6 pages in there might be the weak link of the whole book. But no, it's true. These guys knocked themselves out. They were trying to show me up. And then next issue, 301, that breaks the record, that's Clayton Crane and Jason, Jerome Opinion, and myself are going to do the artwork. And then we got a handful of cover artists. We haven't even announced 3 of them. We're going to do it this week. Pay attention. So, all right, what's your question, good man?
My question concerns the HBO TV series of Spawn. I love that series to death, but it was incomplete.
Can I just brag about the HBO for a second? The HBO, there's only 5 of them. There's only 5 warnings that you could put on any show, right? It was like drugs, violence, sex, nudity, I don't know. It was like there's 5. I forget what the 5 were, but there's 5. So depending on what your show was, they have 2, they have 3. We were the only show at HBO that had all 5. go ahead.
Yeah, is there any chance it could be finished since we left incomplete or rebooted?
Yeah.
Keith David as Spawn again?
Yeah, Keith David had this voice. If any of you guys are watching, he had this voice that was just magnificent, right? There's a part of me that says I'm going to see if I can get Keith to be in the movie.
Yeah.
To just, but not in a big way. I'm going to give you my Easter egg. That somebody just walking down like a street, and then the guy does, and then somebody bumps into him, and then he just turns around and goes, hey, watch where you're going, and it's like that voice, and then he keeps going, and you go, my God, that was a Spawn voice, and he keeps going, right? So I'm going to see, can you come down for like one shot that I can get your voice? We're talking right now, I just had a couple meetings this weekend, right, about a couple different animation looks, both something that we can get kids in at a younger age and then get them into sort of the crack cocaine version of Spawn. do the adult one. So we're talking about that. I think both of those come after the movie, right? So the movie that we ended up doing. So thanks. Yes, sir.
So first of all, congratulations on 300 and 301.
A lot of good people helped me along the way. So
I'm sure I can speak for all of us in saying that we will all be there for opening day of the Spawn movie.
I know that, and I keep telling Hollywood that. I keep telling them the first 20 million in the opening is mine. I go, I got 1 million fans, and they're all going with a date. That's 2 million at $10. That's 20 million. What the hell are you going to do for me, right? So the first 20 million, I know you guys will come. They just don't know that yet, right? They don't know that yet. So I got to convince them.
So you being a first-time director for a movie, and I know you're friends with Kevin Smith, Greg Nicotero, Robert Kirkman, are you having conversations with them with advice or other people in Hollywood asking advice on being a director and what to do?
No.
number one, Todd, are you nervous about being a first-time director? No. Question number two, should you as a human being? Yes, of course I should, but I don't. I have directed this movie 1,000 times in my brain, and if any of you saw this movie called The Star Is Born,
yep.
Bradley Cooper directed that, first-time director. You tell me that movie looked like a first-time director. He was smart enough to surround himself with good people. I'm going to be the least experienced person on that set. They're going to make me look good. I've got Jamie Foxx, won an Academy Award. I've got Jeremy Renner, nominated for Academy Award. I've got Nicotero, who's won dozens of awards. I've got a couple of DPs that have won. Like, everybody I've touched, and Jason Blum, who's won multiple awards and been up for Academy Award. Everybody I'm surrounding myself with is a star. They're just going to carry me. They're going to make me look good. Right? So don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. All right, last question. You look good in that color. Can I say, and let's get a round of applause for Vaughn Green! Vaughn Green eyes! Okay, I'm trying to suck up a little bit. Spawn Green. No, let me just have my delusion.
Thank you very much for your panel today. It was awesome. And especially the business stuff. And one of the things that I wanted to ask was, where do you think the industry is going? What is your biggest fear about the industry and where it's going?
I'm going to tell you about comic books. Comic books are never going away. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. They're
never going away. Here's what I'm saying. It's just a medium of words and pictures. Right? It's words and pictures. And they don't move. They're static picture with words. That combo will never go away. What may change, I don't know, I don't have control of it. Name's Todd, only rhymes with God. So if the delivery mechanism may change, right? The scale, the size, the format, all that. But there will forever be people doing drawings and putting words to those drawings. So I have no fear that comic books won't be around forever. We just may be getting them slightly different. The way that we got our music, 8 tracks, tapes, CDs, DVDs, digital downloads, stream, Spotify, right? It's still music. Music is going to be there. Comic books are going to be the same. Some of the way that we end up basically getting it into our hands or into our house, that may change, right? That's just progress. That's the change I was talking about, right? So if we can find a faster way to get there, and make it cheaper for you to get it, cool on us. But so we'll get there. If any of you guys got an idea of what that is, then do it, because you may be the next millionaire, right? So, oh, she's got the idea. All right. Anyway, thanks for coming, everybody. Have a good time. Thank you, Toronto. We'll be back. Let me also say one last thing. Right now, we are currently scheduled to shoot the Spawn movie in Toronto. At the moment we get all the financing, and that should happen hopefully here in a few more months, that I'm going to tell you where we're shooting it, and I hope that it starts with the word T, and we'll be back, because I'll be here every day just shooting this movie for you. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.